11 p.m., Tuesday, August 4th. Declaration of war. Owing to the summary rejection by the German government of the request made by His Majesty's government for assurances that the neutrality of Belgium would be respected, His Majesty's ambassador in Berlin has received his passport, and His Majesty's government has declared to the German government that a state of war exists between Great Britain and Germany, as from 11 p.m. 4th August.
August the 5th. Julius gives a report of a visit to Hythe, so to visit Eugenie's relatives. Her brother, Frederick Merillion, has just left for Belgium, where he had a business, leaving behind his wife, Florence, and daughter, Ethelwyn.
My dearest wife, I'm now with Cyril at the band, and I'm writing this while sitting outside. Cyril and I went to Hythe by motorbus and looked up Florence and Ethelwyn. Fred had only left an hour before to cross to Ostend for Brussels, but he thought it better to leave his wife in England. I'm afraid you are feeling the stress of this epoch-making time. The clock seems to have gone back a century and brought a Napoleonic era back. I trust history will repeat itself and that once again England will save herself by her exertions and Europe by her example. At this point, the programme of the band came to an end, and they then played Rule Britannia and God Save the King, and afterwards, in respect to calls, the Marseillaise. I'm rather in hopes we may hear of George's whereabouts in the morning. I can quite understand that you are perturbed at the thought of possible dangers ahead for him, and perhaps others. But cheer up, little wife. It is well that our children should be ready to play a part for their country in the face of grave danger and whatever may befall us. We could not wish it otherwise. The attitude of the country seems admirable, and this time of trial may be a valuable lesson to the nation and to that section who seem to have forgotten that life was duty. Thursday the 6th. The German Emperor and his advisers have acted in just the way I always expected, and I never could understand how many people believed in their peaceful protestations. I heard from Jack this morning, and am glad to learn that he hopes to join you after all. It seems that George is encamped at Somerset House, but the battalion is likely to go on to St. Albans soon. With respect to your suggestion about laying in coal and flour, I do not think it right in the national interest to join in the rush for stores. Neither do I anticipate that we should pay much, if any more, a little later. Much love to you, dear, and to all the others. I'm sure you will all keep brave, though anxious hearts. Your loving husband, Julius Sladden.
The following day, Arthur wrote to his mother, who is still on holiday in Wales with the girls.
My dear mother, today I have taken an appointment as a civil surgeon at the Royal Army Medical Corps, and I have to proceed to Chatham on the 13th instant, where I am stationed at No. 9 General Hospital. It is a terrible wrench leaving Mary, but it must be done. Many doctors are wanted, and I can't do less. Whether or not I go on foreign service depends on the development of affairs. From now on, I am just a lieutenant under orders. I spent several hours at the War Office today, fixing up arrangements, and tomorrow must get a uniform and kit. We shan't attempt to come to Newport now. I don't think I could anyway. right in the centre of news and activities here, one feels that a holiday is out of the question. The thing that worries me most is what Mary is to do. I feel that regular occupation will be by far the best thing for her, but it's not easy to arrange. What a terrific struggle is before us, and everyone will have a hard part to play, not least those left at home. News at present is encouraging. The Belgians' deeds are inspiring, and the French attitude splendid. While one cannot have too much admiration for the way the government and the nation are facing the struggle. Goodbye, Mother dear. Keep up a stout heart in all these troubles, and we'll hope for a speedy end to the war. With very much love to you and the girls, from your son, Arthur.
August the 7th. Cyril is still with his father in Kent and undecided about his plans.
My dearest mother, we have returned this evening from Canterbury and found your postcard and also a letter from Arthur. I am afraid that out in the wilds, all this trouble of the war is making you unduly depressed. You must cheer up and be ready for whatever must be done. It will be a pity that your visit may be shortened, and in any case must be spoiled by so many disappointments. But you must make the best of it while it lasts to get yourselves as well and fit as possible. There is great comfort in the knowledge that the Germans have received at the outset a check, which must have spoilt their original plan of campaign. We all feel confident that Germany must be beaten in the long run, for she has not a friend left in Europe save Austria, and I can imagine that Austria is aghast at the situation she has let herself be driven into. What we must all work for and pray for is that Germany's complete subjection may be obtained with the utmost rapidity, for so the suffering will be reduced to a minimum. I think the spirit of the country is perfectly magnificent. It far exceeds the highest hopes I ever had. There is a quiet, calm resolution everywhere. All seem bent upon doing the best they possibly can. There is no shouting and flag-waving, and all the papers are most sensible, and the people seem to read them sensibly. I have been a little uncertain during the last few days as to my own doings. The papers have not hitherto contained any special applications to men quite in my position. I have decided today to write at once to the Oxford OTC headquarters for information, if they can give it me, as to the best way in which I can apply my services. This demand for 500,000 men at once means that officers will be urgently required, so I fancy there must be arrangements for giving old OTC men a further training in camp or barracks to fit them to occupy these posts in case of necessity. We want to go over to Dover tomorrow and have been asked to lunch with Mr. Henry Haywood. Dover is, of course, under martial law and is a most busy place at present. We believe that it is the chief port for sending the expeditionary force, and we have reliable rumours going round that a very large army has been shipped already to Belgium. Much military activity is visible here, especially troop trains and collection of horses, mainly heavy transport animals. The visit to Dover should be most interesting. Mila has written cheerfully from Aunt Lizzie's, but was unable to alter the latter's firm conviction that she was doomed to end her days under German rule. Best love to yourself and the others from your affectionate son, Cyril E. Sladden.
Mila was Amelia Brown Constable, Cyril's fiancée. On August the 9th, Julius, still in Folkestone, writes to his wife in Wales.
My dearest wife, I received your postcard and can quite realise your disappointment at the dislocation of all the plans which would have made for such a happy holiday in Newport. My advice is that you stay where you are till Monday. and then we will meet again at Badsey. I hope the others, except Ethel, will stay on a bit at Newport, if Jack can remain. There is not likely to be any distress at present that cannot be dealt with in the ordinary way. I wrote Brailsford an open postcard, saying I trusted the young men of Badsey would rally to the flag of their country, etc., etc., and saying what our boys were doing. Keep a brave heart, little woman. We must not be too elated at early successes or depressed by untoward events. Love to Jack, should he be with you. Much love to you all, your affectionate husband, Julius Sladden.
Philip Brailsford was the gardener handyman at Seaward House. On Monday, August the 17th, Seaward House was busy once more, with the return of Julius from Kent and Eugenie and Ethel from Newport. Jack and the other three girls, May, Kathleen and Juliet, had stayed on in Wales, from where they wrote to their mother during the following week.
My dear mother, we were glad to have news of you this morning, and glad you had a comfortable journey after the rush at Fishguard. Betty went straight back in the motor to the Mount. We three got tea in Fishguard, bought some fish for supper, also a pair of socks and two handkerchiefs, which I thought I'd send to George. We have been much interested in the account of the expeditionary force, but even now we can't know where it's going. I wonder whether Arthur is going to Brussels. Kathleen heard from Mary and is writing to her now, poor girl. It's a very hard bit of life she has to face now. I keep thinking of our two boys. I wrote to George and sent him the socks, etc. Also Vaseline and boracic powder. I hope they'll reach him. If he doesn't need them, someone else may. I do hope we shall get some news soon of where he is and Arthur too. Meanwhile, the general news sounds hopeful. I'm so glad to hear the vicarage are ready to work with others. Fancy the vicar calling twice within 24 hours. I hope Cyril and Mila will have at any rate a few days together, and you will like having them. Much love to father and all. Your loving daughter, May E. Sladden.
My dear mother, we were very glad to hear that you and Ethel had a good journey home on Monday. I'm very glad the vicarage party seem ready to work together with you in doing work for the Red Cross and on account of the war generally. You must tell us how your meeting with Ma on the subject went off. We shall be glad soon, I think, to get back rather nearer the centre of things, get news sooner, and be able to do more, although we are enjoying our time down here very much. It was very nice to get news of George. He is evidently very busy, and I should think not having a especially interesting time. I expect by now Arthur is settled in some base hospital in the north of France, busy preparing or even already attending to cases. I hope we may get news of him from time to time, although he will not have time or opportunity to write much, I expect. We hope to hear through Mary how to address to him. We are not quite sure, though I fancy Number 9 Hospital would reach him. I dare say he would be glad to get not only private news, but some account of the news given in English papers and the mood of the people here. We spend much time reading the Times, as I suppose you do. I only wish we could get it at the first day. We all thought as one that the session of Brussels was part of a deep-laid plan, and evidently the Times correspondent thinks so. I do wonder what news you get of Uncle Fred, though. I hope he is now in England. Very much love to you all. Your affectionate daughter, Kathleen.
My dear mother, thank you so much for your letter. I am returning George's postcard, which we were glad to get. It is so nice to know where he is,
and that also our letters reached him. He seems to be very busy indeed. I wonder how long they will stay at St. Albans. We had a postcard from Arthur yesterday at Southampton. They were to cross that afternoon, he wrote. He did not know to what port. I should think that at their base hospital might be at Dunkirk or Ostend or some such place. Anyway, he does not seem at all likely to be sent to a field hospital, so I think Mary may feel fairly happy about him, though I fear from all accounts she is worrying too much about him. It would be nice to see Mila when we get back. I wonder how many days it will be before Cyril hears. I suppose he will be most likely to be gone before we come back. It would be a bit of all right if we saw him before he went. I'm feeling very choke full of newspapers again, so much so that I'm going to take a day's rest, only reading the headlines and hearing the extracts the others read out. I had to do that once before, and it was most refreshing and cleared my brain, ready to sit down and read the whole of the Times the next day. It would be very nice to get the Times on the day of the issue again next week, instead of a day late as we have it here. I am sure that the giving up of Brussels is a trap to draw on the Germans. One feels rather sad that they had to do it, but I don't think it is as bad as it seems on the face of it. I think Kitchener is doing a lot behind the scenes, and I have got tremendous faith in him. And the Russians, one feels, are a great standby. The papers were saying how it is a great mistake to grumble at the slowness of the Russian army. They should take Lord Salisbury's advice and study large-scale maps. And if they are not hurried, they will do very efficiently when they are ready. I shall have to go and see Evelyn Joyce, Karma and Osbrook when I get back. Love to you all from your ever affectionate daughter, Juliet Sladder.
Evelyn Osbrook, born on the eve of war, was a newborn daughter of the Vicar of Badsey, the Reverend William Osbrook. Meanwhile, what were the boys up to? By the latter part of August, George was with the transport section of the 15th Battalion Company of London, part of the 4th London Infantry Brigade, which was a civil service territorial group. George writes from their camp in St. Albans, Hertfordshire.
My dear father, you will see from the address whereabouts we are. We're billeted by companies over an area round about, and I expect that we shall be here for some while. But of course, it is impossible to say where we may move to at any time. I hope you will understand that I have not written, only because I have found it quite impossible. I have never faced such a time of continuous occupation, from 5 a.m. till 9:30 p.m. I was on duty day after day, and the men were so raw that I could never relax as though I thought as I have tonight. The peace establishment of an infantry transport section is about one quarter of the size of the war strength, and in our case there is an additional difficulty that a large number of our old trained men left at the end of last year. Consequently, we find ourselves now with a section consisting of 47 men, with 15 wagons and between 50 and 60 horses to look after. And of the 47, there are only 10 who are at present well trained and dependable. I have volunteered for service abroad, and the battalion is likely to split up before long in order to sever the home and foreign services sections. The Belgium situation has been pretty serious, I think. But Kitchener's report of yesterday seemed to show that the German forces, huge as they are, have just about had a bellyful. I'm glad to hear that Cyril is taking up service. I saw Arthur after his plans were complete. He was very keen indeed, as keen as Mary was dejected. I hope he will get a hospital where there will be work for him. I had a letter from May this morning, also some enclosed necessities, boracic powder, etc. It seems strange to think that for the vanity of an emperor and the pride of a class, I might have been by the sea at the present time, civilized, clean, and at leisure. Much love to you all, your affectionate son, George.
August the 30th. Jack returned to Sydenham from Wales and wrote to his mother the next day.
My dear mother, I had a good journey back here last night and got in soon after 11. Lord Kitchener's statement in this morning's papers respecting the military operations is satisfactory reading, and the Times military correspondent is less gloomy this morning. We are very short-handed at the office with a good many territorials away and other men on leave. The authorities do not appear at all anxious for the remainder of their staff to recruit and are refusing to let men go unless they're prepared to volunteer for foreign service. They have already forbidden anyone to join the special constabulary. It is not a good example to other employers. I'm glad that there is no foundation for the report that Boulogne was to be abandoned. It seems very unlikely if there's any possibility of keeping the Germans away. With love to you all, I remain your affectionate son, John D. Sladden.
September the 3rd. Arthur, the doctor, had recently left England for France in order to set up a base hospital for the expeditionary force. He was able only to send a very brief field office postcard.
I am quite well.
That was brief. Meanwhile, Cyril was at an officer's training camp in Churn.
My dear mother, you will be expecting to hear a little more news of me now that I have been here long enough to get something more than the first impressions which I gave Mila on Monday night. So I am making use of one of the first slack periods I have had since arrival. Although we are kept so busy, we are really having quite a good time. New arrivals have constantly been coming, and we now have about 300 or more in camp. We are organised into four companies, of which D is the newest and still growing. I am in C Company, whose commander is the captain of the rugby school OTC and a very efficient officer. Each company has its own mess, comprising two large marquees, connected by a short awning. The front is furnished with tables and chairs. The back is for meals. So we are quite comfortable. I am lucky in having been able to secure a tent with only one other man in it, an arrangement which I hope will hold now that we are pretty well settled down. My companion is from Rugby and was to have gone up to Oxford next term. I fancy there are not very many in this camp who have not been up to the varsity yet. So far, the weather has been splendid. The nights are fairly chilly sometimes, and the dew is heavy. When we turn out at 6 o'clock, we find the sun clearing away a dense morning mist, and a cold bath in the open air at 6:15 wakes one up. I have slept excellently, even the first night, and am feeling very fit, although a bit weary with so much unaccustomed hard work. My feet are holding out well, a bit tired, but not sore at all, which is a great comfort. It is fine country round here for camping. Big bare hills for the most part, with a very few scattered farms. The elevation varies from 300 to 600 feet. There are no metalled roads about, only tracks and the railway. Trees and hedges are scarce. I hear 5,000 more yeomanry are to come shortly, so the place will be a sea of tents. I must close now to catch the evening post. Give Mila my best love and tell her I will write a good letter on Sunday. Thank her very much for hers. Best love from your affectionate son, Cyril E. Sladden.
September the 18th. Kathleen wrote to her father from Sydenham, excited that she was hoping to see George for a day.
My dear father, George hopes to get off for one night and to be here about 24 hours from Saturday to Sunday evening. I have invited Betty. It would be so nice to see him. I'm afraid Mother will feel rather jealous of us, but at least we will send her much news of him. He asks to be provided with the best hot bath available, and shall have to make a festive dinner of it and kill the fatted calf. I will write Mother the longest letter I can find time for and give her all the little bits of news afterwards. I had a letter from Arthur yesterday, also from Mary the previous day. Evidently, he is actually in or near Nantes. Mary says he is camping in the grandstand of a sports club. Says they are living in reasonable comfort and not too busy. Mary tells me he and another man are practically in sole charge of the medical side of the hospital. He finds it difficult to write on account of having to leave out so much. I believe he really is almost overcautious, to judge from the letters from men at the front published in the papers. Not being able to teach today, some of us went off to Hyde Park and saw the Public Schools Battalion parade and march off to Victoria, where we saw them on train for Epsom. A good lot of men of various ages. Much love to all, Kathleen.
A week later, Kathleen wrote again, this time to her mother, about George's visit.
My dear mother, I am so sorry to be so late writing you my promised letter to tell you all about George. The truth is, I really have not had time the whole week to write anything like a decent letter. I have been busy with work. Wednesday, I did get home a little earlier, but only to go down to a meeting about starting a hostel for Belgian refugees in Sydenham to see if we could do anything to help. Well, there is perhaps not much to tell you about George when all is said and done, except that he was really looking very well indeed. He knew no more about their plans than when he last wrote. They are not keen on Egypt or India, and would much rather go to the continent. They may, however, be in England for a long time yet. He was uncertain how far weather conditions in North France or Germany would permit of active operation in the winter. If they did not, there might be an enforced lull in affairs during the winter, and in that case, perhaps many reinforcements would not be sent over until the spring. They may be moved elsewhere in England if they do not go abroad before long. He says the life suits him excellently. Of course, it is not the sort of life he would like as a permanency, sleeping in a wagon and having no more possessions than he can carry in a kit bag. It imposes many limitations on you. But he actually enjoys roughing it for a time, and would certainly not be happy if he were not doing his share in the struggle. He sleeps, as I have said, in a covered wagon with one or two others. They are quartered in some farm buildings near Bedmont. The cottages nearby make a nice addition to their income by washing and mending for the soldiers, also making fruit pies and other additions to their rations. They have a very good cook in their company, so do very well in the way of rations. The work is not so hard now as it was at one time, as the men know their work better. George had just over 24 hours with us. It was so nice to see him again. Of course, Betty was delighted to come. We talked a lot that evening, and I think he slept well in his own bed and kept his usual Sunday hours. We had supper early at 7 and all went down to Sydenham Station to see him off afterwards. A good many men in uniform were going off by the same train, all returning from short leave, I expect. Your affectionate daughter, Kathleen.
An Evening with the Sladdens, Part 2. The cast was Julius, Anthony Miller, Eugenie, Patsy Miller, Jack, Robin Neal, May, Jane Neal, Kathleen,
Sandra Sparrow. Arthur, Chris Smith. George, Richard Court. Cyril, Terry Sparrow. Juliet, Martha Murray. The narrator was Will Dallimore, and the official voice was Valerie McGann. Directed by Maureen Spinks. An Evening with the Sladdens was a Badsley Society production.